Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2010. Lecture 9, delivered on September 22, 2010. The title of this lecture is Metrics of Risk.
Today, the metrics of risk. In finance, we have a number of different ways of describing risk. The most basic way of describing risk you probably are familiar with. It's when you find out that you took risk and you didn't know it. That metric of risk is when you say, oh shit. Truth be told, I've said that a lot of times in my life. It seemed that the Army wasn't about all about be all you can be. They shot at your ass. But in finance, we have to have measurable quantities. And risk has to have numbers associated with it, specifically so that we can measure risk of one thing, one activity, relative to the risk of another activity. So if I say, well, here is a stock and here is another stock, I need to know what the relative risks of those are. Because that's the only way I can have a reason to assess an expected return. This isn't Zen, what we do. And are we going to be right about the risk? Are we going to be right about the expected return? No, we are not gods. Here's the rule. You do the numbers by our standards. You hold to the standards. You don't make your mistakes. And then when someone questions you in a corporate meeting about, well, are you sure, or how did you do this? You can put your head up and hang your fangs out and say, I did it by the way I was taught, and this is the standard in the business. That's how we do it. We can't be perfect, and you know the future is going to end up being different from what we predict. But what you can do is say, this was the industry standard, this is the best. And if you don't like what I did, go talk to Professor C. He will eat your ass off. Okay? Look, I've already told you about the relationship between risk and expected return. The greater the expected return, the more risk you're going to have to take. You're not going to get anything for free in this life. You're not Paris Hilton. Okay? You're going to have to take risk to get an expected return, and that risk is going to go up as you expect a greater return. And that, by the way, that doesn't mean you're going to get a greater return. It means that you're going to expect a greater return. The truth be told is you can take a lot of risk, expect a high return, and you can get killed. And you hear these people, one of the things that amazes me all the time, these finance TV shows on the news, well, this man here, he was the top performing mutual fund manager for last year. Isn't he a fine, upstanding young Christian stud? No, that just means he got lucky. One, he took a lot of risk, and two, it came out that it worked for him. That does not mean that he is any better than a mutual fund manager who got a low return on his investments. That mutual fund manager might very well have targeted a low-risk portfolio for a clientele that wants a low risk. The reality of it is that there is no hero in a high return in mutual fund management or in about anything. You take a higher risk, you might get a higher expected return, but that doesn't mean that the mutual fund managers who are conservative, prudent, were any worse than the one who had the high return. But in our media culture and in the pop culture of finance that is promoted through the mainstream media, you get this impression that the higher the return someone gets, the better that person is in some metaphysical way almost. No. And a lot of you will spend most of your lives, if you are in anything that has to do with business, you will be shaping risk so that you don't take the maximum risk for the maximum expected return. That's almost a sure way to get killed sooner or later. You'll be conservative, and you'll learn that in most companies, they are careful, and they don't want you to take maximum risk for maximum expected return. They want you to lower the risk to lower the expected return so that you can come out at the end of the day and have a better chance of survival to play the next round. Let me get down to this, and I'm going to show you that in this course, we have several different metrics for risk. One is the one I told you. You just, that was dangerous. And that usually happens right before you're going to die. And then there are some that are a little more quantitative. Now, one thing that is big in finance is a volatility. In other words, that's sort of a measure of risk. How up and down, the magnitude, the swing, if you will. I know investors who are, they're just obsessed with volatility. The better, more volatility, the more likely I am to make the killing today, kind of thing. So the word volatility is a term that you will hear associated with risk. Later in this course, when we get down to actual names of quantitative measurements, the one that is big in finance to this day, and it's been around for, it's been around for almost a half century, but it really got popular, honestly, in the 1970s, is what we call beta. Beta as the measure of risk standardized against a market portfolio. In other words, you diversify a portfolio until you have essentially every asset of an economy in its weight in that economy. And then you measure the performance of any stock or any other security against that volatility, that risk. And so beta is very popular to this day. And honestly, I don't see much going beyond beta other than these very high-powered models that I've used in the past. But beta is still the biggie in business when we're talking about business risk and all that. However, at the heart of beta is one that you have seen in your statistics course. For those of you who know statistics, it is indeed statistics. One of my specializations, my PhD field specializations, was econometrics, which is the economics of probability theory and statistics. And let me take you through this grinder here. In statistics, you would have learned about what is called standard deviation, variance and standard deviation. And those are at the heart of even our more preferred measure of that is called beta. The standard deviation, which measures, you can use it in some nice ways. And in finance, we do use this standard deviation quite frequently, especially in forecasting, in business models, forecasting sales, forecasting gross profit, forecasting net income. The sigma, as it is sometimes known, is very significant. So let's do a forecast. Well, someone would say, what do you think the stock market is going to do, Professor C? My answer to that is very clear. I know what the stock market's going to do. It's going to fluctuate. Okay, then they get a little, that's when the fussiness starts. But look, it's far better than allowing yourself to get pinned down with a specific number to give a probability distribution. So we could say that let's talk about sales in a company. And if suppose that we have sales with a probability distribution so that we put five possible states on the economy for the coming year, we could have an economy that is great next year. In which case, let's say that sales would be $70,000. On the other end, we could say, oh, well, that has a probability of 0.05 of occurring. In other words, about a little more than the probability that donkeys will fly. And on the other hand, we could have an economy that totally sucks next year. And this sucks. And there, the sales would be 30,000. And then that has a probability of 0.05. And then in the middle, we have an economy that is poor. And we'll say there's a 0.20 probability of that economy. And if it's a poor economy, we'd have a $40,000 sales level. And then on the other hand, a good, not great, but good, and our sales there, with a probability of 0.20, our sales would be 60,000. And then we have an economy that would be in the middle with a probability of 0.50. It doesn't suck. It's not great. It's not poor. It's not good. It's just sort of like, meh. For 50,000, our sales would be there. Real finance for real people. Okay. Now, the first thing we're going to have to do here is calculate the mean. And we use the Greek letter mu for that. Now, one thing I should point out is that if it's a true probability distribution, your probability should add up to 1. In other words, you exhaust the probability space. You're not leaving out any possibility. There's, in other words, 100% chance of one of these happening. And honestly, I remember a Monte Carlo study where there were some of these econometrics houses, forecasting houses, all that. They have like 12 states of the economy and all of that. And I remember some studies that showed that really doing a 5-state analysis does you just as good as if you go wild and do nuances of it sucks, but it doesn't suck horrible. The horsemen of the apocalypse aren't coming. Or, yeah, here come the horsies. And then on the other, great, and it's so great that and let the good times roll, but it's great, but not that great. You know, you can break this down awfully finely, and all you're doing is just kind of counting angels on the head of a pen, doing that kind of stuff. 5 is fine, and on an exam, it would be 5 that I would give you, 5 states. Now, here's the thing, though, is you got to move quickly through this calculation. It's a hand calculation. When you're doing it at your dorm, then you can obviously crank through it with Excel, and that's what I do. But when you're doing it by hand, you just got to move fast on this. The expected value, or the mean, we're going to write that, we do that as 0.05 times 30,000 bucks plus 0.20 times $40,000 plus 0.50 times 50,000 plus 0.20 times $60,000 plus 0.05 times $70,000. In other words, and this is a great thing to put in your notes so people will see it, the mean is the sum from k equals 1 to the n states of the probability of the k state times the cash flow on the kth state, if you're into that kind of notation. And even if you're not, writing that down and just making that very prominently displayed in your notes impresses the hell out of people. And this is a symmetric distribution, as you probably noticed. So it's going to come out on the central tendency. It'll come out to be $50,000. Now, you'll notice that the units are in dollars. The units are in dollars. Okay, and obviously, we're saying that we expect a $50,000 cash flow at the end of the day. It does not have to be that, but that's where we would expect it to be. Now, it will come out to be on the center as long as the distribution is symmetric, as I did here. Be cautious about that, though. Usually, I do a symmetric, but sometimes I just throw it, I skew it one way or the other. So just be a little careful and be sure before you just write down the center number that I've given you an actual, truly symmetric distribution. Now for the standard deviation. The standard deviation as a formula is, and we write it with the Greek letter sigma, is the square root of the sum from k equals 1 to n of the probability of the kth state times the cash flow from the kth state minus the mean quantity squared. In other words, you take probability times cash flow minus mean in each state, squared, I should say, add them up, and then take the square root. Once you take the square root, it will come out to be a number in dollars, just like the mean will. And this is where it gets to be a pain in the ass. It really does, because if you make a mistake here, then things just go to Hades from here on out. It really does. So just make sure that you keep yourself frosty. One of the things that I always recommend is that you take that $50,000 you found for the mean, store it in your first registry on your calculator. Then you can just invoke it for each cycle. So that in this case, what I'm going to do here, I'm going to do this in a columnar fashion. We'll take 0.05 times 30,000, less the mean squared. And then I'm just going to write these all straight down. That's the way it's just my way of doing it. And I strongly recommend that you kind of stick with this if you don't have your own strategy. Is I get this part of it written out very quickly. Each of the individual terms of the thing. So that we have the whole math part laid out, and then we can just pound it into our calculator. Okay. And I will read these off for the podcasting audience. For the podcast listening audience, that we will have, the calculation will be 0.05 times the square of 30,000 minus 50,000 plus 0.20 times the square of 40,000 minus 50,000 plus 0.50 times the square of 50,000 minus 50,000 plus 0.20 times the square of 60,000 minus 50,000 plus 0.05 times the square of 70,000 minus 50,000. Shortcuts. Again, it has to be a symmetric distribution, but you can shortcut this. You can see that the center is going to create a value of 0. Don't even bother to calculate that. You will also notice that these are symmetric with respect to the number that will come out. So 0.05 times 30,000 minus 50,000 is 0.05 times negative 20,000 squared, which equals, what the hell does that equal? 0.05 times 20,000 squared comes out to be, comes out to be 20 million. You will notice that that will be the same number that you get here, because it's just the difference between squaring a negative and squaring a positive. That difference will disappear. So that this number, if that number is 20,000, then the first number you calculate is 20 million, then the last number you calculate would be 20 million too. Let me make sure. Do you see that? Are you okay with that? It's not really hard to see, but just make sure. See how I'm trying to save time. And then I would have, for 0.20 times the square of 40,000 minus 50,000, that would be 0.20 times negative 10,000 squared. and 0.20 times negative 10,000 squared is 20 million. For some reason I knew that, but it just didn't seem right. So that means that if 0.20 times 40, the square of 40,000 minus 50,000 is 20 million, then the 0.20 times the square of 60,000 minus 50,000 is also going to be $20 million. You see how I'm saving myself time. This is actually quite important to do in the context. The only problem is, of course, if you make a mistake, an arithmetic mistake, you multiply it, but you double the mistake. But now if I add all that up, I will get 80 million. But don't forget that you have to take the square root of the 80 million. The square root of the 80 million. And if you take the square root of the 80 million, in this case, your square root of 80 million will give you, what is it, about 8,500, what is it? 8,944 and what? You did that in your head? Okay, you should have said yes. Okay. That is a metric of risk. That sigma is a metric of risk. Now, we take it in two directions here. Assuming that we have something that is reasonably like a normal distribution, I can tell you right now that based upon the mean and the standard deviation, I know that there is a 67% probability that the cash flow at the sales line will be somewhere between $50,000, the center, minus $8,944.27, and $50,000, the center, plus the mean, I should say, plus $8,944.27. I can say that. I have a 67% chance of the actual cash at the flow at the sales line. And to do that, I will 50,000 minus 894427 and 50,000 plus 8944.27. So I know that with a 67% probability, the cash flow at the sales line will be $41,055.73, will be between these two values, $41,055.73 and $58,944.27. Yeah. From the fact that, and if it's a normal distribution, 67% of the area of the normal will lie from minus one standard deviation to plus one standard deviation of the mean. It's a good question. It's good. I mean, it's like, well, did you just pull out of your head? Where did you get the 67%? That comes from probability theory. That I know that if it is reasonably like a normal distribution, which I'm going to assume here because I don't have anything else to go on, then 67% of the time, the number will fall between minus and plus one standard deviation of the mean. I can do even better than that here. I can say that there's a 95% chance that the cash flow will fall within 2 standard deviations of the mean. There's a 99% chance that it will fall within 3 standard deviations of the mean. So I can say that there is a 95% chance that the actual cash flow will fall between $50,000 minus 2 times $8,944.27 and $50,000 plus 2 times $8,944.27. Notice how to get more certainty, I get a fuzzier range. And again, just based on a normal distribution, I can say that there's a 99% chance that it will lie between $50,000 minus 3 times $8,944.27 and $50,000 plus 3 times $8,944.27. So in other words, and I'll write it over here compactly, 67% is mu minus sigma to mu plus sigma, 95% from mu minus 2 sigma to mu plus 2 sigma, and 99% chance that it will be between mu minus 3 sigma and mu plus 3 sigma. Now, if you ever have the misfortune of taking a probability and statistics course from me, you would see that we can do all kinds of nuances with it. But at the end of the day, honestly, in a business environment, you pretty much stick to this kind of a rule for doing it. And, you know, you get these quant jocks who do all kinds of fancy backflips and all that. But in just regular straightforward business, I was talking to a cash flow manager a couple of months ago, and I asked him, well, what kinds of things do you use? Really high power? And he says, no, just the basics. And he described just this kind of thing to me. Forecast a probability distribution, then just go through and calculate the probabilities, ranges for different probabilities. That was basically what he does, he and his couple of workers. Now, the last thing I'm going to bring up to end this, the problem with this thing that we're doing here is it would be very specific to the company. So if you're doing internal control or doing internal forecasting, this is very good. This is where you would want to be. It's with your mu and your sigma, doing your probability, cash flow distribution, all that kind of great stuff. But if you want to do analysis, you would have the problem that these numbers would be, you would have obviously different levels and sizes of cash flows from one company to the next, one industry to the next. Some industries you'd have small numbers, some industries you'd have insanely large numbers. So that's why we would want to create a metric that you could compare across companies so that the specific numbers of any given company wouldn't distort its comparison with another company. That's when we come to our last measure, which is the one that we like a lot. It's called the coefficient of variation, CV. And it's so easy. It's just such an easy measure. The coefficient of variation, CV, is nothing but sigma divided by mu. In other words, all you're doing is scaling the standard deviation by the mean of the company's numbers. And that way, you're comparing from one company to the next. You can compare apples and oranges if you do CVs. Like I said, internally, you can stop with the mu and the sigma and all of that. But if you want to go from one company to the next, you need to have some way of standardizing the numbers so that they are all on the same scale, on the same level. And that's why the coefficient of variation is out there, CV. And that's the one that we'll be using as the in the next couple of chapters is CV, so that we can say, all right, well, let's look at different companies. Or another thing that's interesting is we look at sales, we look at gross profit, and then at net income. And we can look at the CVs for the different lines based on a probability distribution. And then we can say, all right, what's a CV look like at the net income line versus a CV at the sales line? And we can see some very interesting and telling things about a company and about volatility. Sometimes the CV at the sales line and the CV at the net income line are very similar. Sometimes they're very different. And if they're very different, then we can ask why. And that gives us a window. The answer to that why gives us a window into some of the internal nuances and subtleties of the risk that is going on in the company. Is this business risk or is this financial risk? And that's when it gets to be very extremely cool, because you can see the difference between a company where the cash flow risk is all just because of the business it's in, and where there's a company where the risk is because of the capital structure that the business has chosen to pursue. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.